That's Lester Bowie's Brass Fantasy with Smooth Operator, made popular, as you know, by the great Sade, from the album Serious Fun, released in 1989. Lester, of course, is on trumpet. E.J. Allen, Gerald Brazel, Stanton Davis, also on trumpet. My favorite instrument, Bob Stewart on tuba. Famadou Danmoy on percussion, Frank Lacey on trombone, along with another favorite of mine, Steve Torrey on trombone, Vincent Chansey on French horn, and Ken Crutchfield and Vinnie Johnson on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead. It is Thursday, May the 8th, and we're doing an update of a subject we last tackled about 2 months ago when we started talking about political consciousness. And, of course, it's time to revisit it just to see if there's any recalibration going on, whether you have had new thoughts about your political consciousness. And as we approach the midterm elections, 6 months away, what is it that is informing your political consciousness right now? Where would you place yourself? How do you see yourself in relationship to the various forms of government, at local and state and federal? How do you feel as a citizen? How do you feel about this thing called democracy? And do you believe that in any way, the events of the day have had a profound effect on what you are thinking and feeling as a voter or a would-be voter? But I also want you to link that, independent of the choice that people inevitably are asked to make in an election year, how are you tracking your political consciousness? Not just your political choice, you know, whether you're Democrat or Republican or some other party, but what is that political consciousness? And how is it feeling these days? how is it going? Is it still with you? Have you changed? And if so, what has caused you to change? Are you paying attention to the news, or are you experiencing a different kind of political consciousness, one that comes from interaction, one that comes from observation and study? What is it that is informing your political outlook, your political mindset? We're talking about that today. 888-874-4888. Well, the president is spending all day today in California, and all he's doing today is raising money for all kinds of democratic causes. He's going to be in Los Angeles and San Diego and San Jose, all to raise money, because in the end, this is one of the things that we need to deal with, and that is our reality is very often the end result of the packaged message that people want us to believe in one way or the other. They can buy our minds. They can buy it frequently if they have the money to consistently run these ads and messages that get to us in one way or the other. So let's be thoughtful today. Not that you're not thoughtful every day. Of course you are. But I wanted to kind of really see if you've changed in your outlook, if you're aware of it, and to what degree has your outlook changed? What accounted for that, if anything? And if you were being polled right now, how would you describe yourself? Where would you fit if you think you would fit anywhere? I had a really interesting discussion with a young man not too long ago, and he was talking about feeling so out of it. He felt as if his political consciousness was developing at a much faster pace than his ability to cope with it. And I said, well, what do you think is accounting for that? And what was accounting for it, he said, it was very profound. He said that life was happening to him at such a rate that he didn't have time to sit down and really, you know, dissect everything. He just had to deal with it at the speed it came at him. And whenever he could find some degree of breathing room, some place to just quietly contemplate, he was able to sense a strong manipulation, he said. He felt very manipulated. He didn't even know whether what he believed was true or not. He didn't know what the reality is that people in places like high office, what is the reality that they are dealing with? What are they seeing? Why can't they see the problems that people see every single day? How come they don't get that message? How is it that they miss these cues? So, the question, well, actually a couple of questions, is what is your political consciousness today? And do you sense in any way a movement away from the last time we talked about it? How is it shaping your attitudes? How is it shaping your action? How is it shaping the people around you? Because in the end, and I'm just putting this out for consideration, it is so not about voting. This business of voting is super hyped. The political consciousness is a lifelong way of conducting yourselves within a society. How do we make ourselves useful? How do we relate to other people in this thing that we call a society? What is our role? How can we even be effective if we don't understand what it is we're looking at? And a lot of us are getting information from media people who are themselves very confused or are filling the required role of propaganda. Let's just confuse the people out there. Let's just tell them anything but the truth. And you know, let's tell it as often as we can to get them totally confused and dependent on us. So 888-874-4888. Tell me about these attitudes that you think you've discerned. And I want you to kind of measure it as against the last time we talked about this subject of a political consciousness. And I think people had some difficulty with that because we never asked about our political consciousness. We asked about our political choices. We are asked about our political attitudes. But what is our political consciousness? Big question. Big question. Do you have the answer? Do you have an answer? Do you have an idea of what it is that we're talking about? Let's deal with that today. Okay, and while you are calling, let me see. I'm getting some messages on leadstories@gmail.com. Somebody was talking about the Cinco de Mayo speech that we heard, the lecture. And Thomas says, I will use that speech in my early American history class when we come to the Civil War in the fall. That's great. That's wonderful. And I'm hearing now from Curtis. He says, greetings, I had an epiphany. What would happen to people who organized prior to any election, showed up to protest, not the election, but protest the Democrats and Republicans? If all the polls were manned by someone carrying banners protesting the status quo, would we be identified as terrorists? Should they... What is this saying here? Should they have the right to protect their identity with masks? And would that up the ante? Keep up the good work. Thank you, Curtis, for your call today. Well, Dallas, it's Sarah.
Oh, greetings, Utrecht.
Thank you to you too, Sarah.
Yes.
How are you today?
Not too bad, Utrecht. We're finally getting some rain out here, and so I'm enjoying the weather out here. And greetings as well to the PRN listening audience. Your topic today, Utrecht, you know, I have not really budged much from the last time when I spoke to you and I saying I'm a non-participant in the electoral process. And it has reinforced my ability even more when I'm looking around and I'm seeing everything else that's going on right now with everyone gearing up for the midterm.
And what has made an impact on you?
What has really impacted me, Beatrice, is when I'm hearing, especially the black community being blamed for the Tea Party coming in 2010 and taking over because we are told that we did not go to the polls and vote as we did in 2008. So therefore, we are being held to be responsible for the Tea Party taking over. And I'm hearing a lot of political analysts are picked up that same refrain. They've been repeating it, and it boiled my goat. Because I'm saying to myself, we are 13% of the population. If all of the people that were eligible to vote in 2010 would have went to the polls and voted, it would not have meant a drop in the bucket to what happened in the national election. So for black people to sit up here and allow ourselves to be scapegoated and to be blamed as to being the one who became apathetic and did not go to the polls, and therefore we're responsible for the Tea Party, it hardened me even more. Because I said, this is flagrant.
But yeah. on a daily basis, if you were to track your movement from the last time we talked about the subject to today, what specifically would you say has moved you into this new space that you're occupying where you're more resolute than ever about your views?
When I'm seeing you, Trees, that, for instance, the affirmative action with the Supreme Court, all of these things that are being rolled back here, and it has shown me that what we are thinking with the legislative process, that we can use that in order to achieve a goal. And it puts me also in mind with Dr. Amos Wilson and things that he have said, because we have been sold this panacea that a ballot is supposed to be our solution, that if we go to the polls in record number, we vote, and we put people in office to represent us because it's supposed to be a representative government, that we're going to get things. But no society has ever been able to free themselves by obeying the laws of their oppressor or by voting, because if that would so be the case, Utrecht, voting would have never been put on the table for anyone. It would have become something of a monarchy or a dictatorship. It would never have even been instituted.
But so no, in this election coming, are you voting?
No, Utrecht, I told you I was done with it. I'm done since 2008. I'm through. As long as I live, I'm not casting a ballot, for not even for dog catcher. No, I am done.
Okay, well, that is interesting. Do you feel the weight of this decision on you every day?
I don't
Does
see
it
the
bother
weight
you?
Of it. I feel very relieved, because what I'm saying is, if I see something come along that would some or the other change me, that I can see that maybe if I cast a ballot, it might make a difference, then I might reconsider my decision. But now, coming into the realization that I'm in right now in this space, it is a wasted effort. It is not going to do. Only a complete revolution would do things. You trees would change things. You standing in a queue for hours on end to cast a ballot for someone that is being paid by corporations, who is funding their campaign to put them into office, what change do you think you're going to make? Whose phone calls are they going to be answering first? It's not going to be my phone call. It's going to be whoever paid for their campaign, donated most for their campaign coffers. That's who's going to be on their speed dial. That's who they're going to be listening to, like you hear with AIPAC and all of these other lobbying groups, the gay lobbies and everyone else. That is who is funding them, and that is who they listen to, and that is whose priorities are being pushed, as we can see in the legislative process. Black people have been moved off the table. We're not even on the stove. We've completely been tossed to the floor, and nobody's bothering to pick it up.
Well, you got us started, that's for sure. And, you know, people will, I'm sure, react. But it is an interesting point of view. Thank you so much for getting us started today, Sarah, with your call. 888-874-4888. Now, this is an interesting question. If, as Sarah suggests, voting is not the answer, then what is? What is the answer? Chris from Queens, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, Utrecht.
Good afternoon to you, Chris.
I just wanted to say, first of all, I agree with a lot with what Sarah just said. The realization of, you know, the way the system actually has been set up and the way it's been operating at such a corrupt level that they really, for me, to respond to your question, and this started occurring to me actually a good 10 years ago, but it has totally reinforced itself. I don't have any affiliate. Like, it's for me to tell you specifically, party-wise, I cannot answer your question, because I don't ascribe to anything that's out there that's allegedly supposed to be a particular party that represents a certain viewpoint, because I don't think that my viewpoint, subjectively and, you know, representing other people who may agree with me, is represented at all, you know. And I think it's important to consider this. In the United States of America, okay, putting aside the platitudes of democracy and all these wonderful terms that we really have no respect for anymore, in my opinion, and that's another discussion, we have such a connection to an addiction, I would say, to labels, and it really impedes our ability to just stop and think. And I don't mean just hear a lot of noise in our brains, just ponder and think something, to say, oh, I see something different in this. We are so addicted to that label that we don't have the ability to even respond. If you look at the European countries, and I'm, you know, excluding maybe the last 10 years because of this whole economic crisis or what's been going on, most of the countries, the parliamentary system countries, and this is not to say one is better or worse, I'm just saying that those countries, from the Mediterranean all the way to the northern countries, they have parliamentary systems which actually truly do represent minority views. you know, like maybe they'll need maybe 2% of the population or 3%, and then they get on the ballot and they're actually heard. They're actually represented when you listen to certain shows and programs and things. You'll see, for example, the Communist Party, which is a dirty word here, not to say that I, you know, that I ascribe to that philosophy. I'm just saying that they're actually represented. And so you have maybe someone who has socially, maybe they're conservative, and fiscally they're liberal, or vice versa, or whatever the case may be. You know what I mean? I mean, there is a representation mm-hmm. and a voice within that body of government that you can say, well, maybe I can do this. And so people are not so resistant to actually saying, well, wait a minute, let me step outside of the box, and maybe the gods will not throw, you know, thunder on me if I don't vote for the Democrats or the Republicans. I don't think that choice is available to us here because it's not available in our way of thinking, if you can understand what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm, I do.
You know what I mean? And it's just so obvious to me. And that, and it's compounded by the fact that the majority of the people in the country, I mean, if you stop and speak to people, whether you're in the supermarket or, you know, whatever, and maybe you could strike up a conversation, when they can get outside of that identification box like Tea Party and all this other garbage, as I call it, you know, they will express that same lack of faith or trust in their system, you know. It's just not there because it's corrupt. It is corrupt at its very core, and it's corrupt not in the traditional sort of, you know, when they would say, you know, like banana republics where people would take bribes, open bribes and things like that. It's corrupt at its very core. You know, you have a body of people who are supposed to represent, you know, the Congress and everyone else. And I am sure, and I'm not just saying this, I'm sure that when you meet these many of these people personally, and perhaps they invite you to their home and you have a drink with them and you chat, I'm sure that they are very nice people, many of them, and I'm sure that you would have a nice time with some of them.
But let me ask you, Chris, you've given us a really good theoretical overview. What's your personal political philosophy? What is your personal political ethic?
My sympathies in the past have been not because of the label, but because of positions and expressions of positions on certain issues. I have a card for the Democratic Party. Okay, I don't feel that way at all anymore. I do not. In fact, to tell you the honest truth, I feel so betrayed by the quote unquote Democratic Party that I actually have more antipathy and contempt for them than I have for the so-called Republicans. I honestly mean that very sincerely, and you know why? And I can tell you, whether I'm listening to programs from NPR, National Public Radio, and the programs in morning that have more of a reputation for being open-minded, and I say this with all the sincerity, that it's insidious the way they treat certain issues. And people, and it amazes me to this day how Americans, and not all of them, but, you know, you can judge by some of the responses that they bite. Things are put out there.
Well, but you're veering again into theoretical.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know exactly what you mean. Do you want me to tell you that?
How do you see yourself as a political being? What is the abiding principle that guides you in making your political choices?
You mean when I'm looking at a particular candidate?
No, just your political life, everyday political life.
Ethics. I mean, you want to laugh at me? It's ethics. It really is. I don't consider the United States to be an ethical country anymore in the way that it is represented.
We leave it there. You've given us quite a bit to chew on, and I see people wanting to chime in. So thank you so much, Chris, for your very profound contribution today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Donald writes, "My political and social beliefs have been affirmed. In the 1960s, I left the civil rights movement to join the Black Power movement. I was less concerned about voting as I was with knowledge, organizing, and power. I became concerned with owning the institutions in our neighborhood, or at least controlling them, I became more aware of how we spend our money. Obama's election to the presidency confirms that no matter who is in office, the system is so strong it will be business as usual. It is a waste for us. 50 years and we have been loyal to the Democrats and have gotten nothing but ignored and abused. Michael from New York City, you're on the air.
Hello. Good afternoon, Miss Utrecht. The other day that I'm calling in to make a comment that the other day the program which you had about history, the Civil War, and the Latinos, I want to say that was a beautiful program. Nowadays, a lot of the history that you see and that you read are just not truthful to the point where they don't give you actual accounts, and so therefore it's just hard to get a grasp of your own where you come from, that kind of stuff.
I'm glad you enjoyed the program. It was interesting because that very day, Cinco de Mayo, both the president and the vice president made speeches about immigration. They obviously didn't understand the meaning of Cinco de Mayo. But tell me, Michael, what is your political philosophy and how strongly are you married to it?
Unfortunately, I don't quite understand the actual question, and so
you consider yourself a political person?
I'm not quite sure what that
means. A person with a political consciousness.
Got a political consciousness. What can I say? I mean, the people at the Democrats as well as the Republicans. I mean, they are who they are. They've chosen to be, from what I've been listening to, but what I've been hearing, they've chosen to. This is who they are. I mean, what can I say? I mean,
okay,
but what is my political
philosophy?
I'm sorry?
You can give it some thought if you wish.
No, political philosophy, I have no idea what that definition even means, and so therefore I wouldn't be able to answer that question.
Okay. Thank you so much, though, for calling, and thanks for your interest.
And also, if you have more of that type of programs, please do not be shy about putting it on. Also, one more question. Who is that individual who was talking? Does he have a book as well as
I read it out to you. If you go to the Facebook page, you'll get the information there.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Have
a good day.
Thank you very much, Michael, for calling. Thanks so much. Well, we hear from Nathaniel, who says that our so-called government is a monarchy of fools doing the bidding of the rich and corporations that don't give a damn about the common working person in this country. That is a widely accepted sentiment, I must tell you, a widely shared sentiment. People are becoming more and more, as Chris had said, a feeling of betrayal is very deep among many people today who feel very disillusioned about politics. 888-874-4888. I'm going to take a little break, and we'll come back to your thoughts right after this teeny tiny break. Lester Bowie and his Brass Fantasy with Smooth Operator. You're listening to PRN.FM, and I'm Yatrice Lead. The program is Lead Stories, and we're talking about where you are today. We did this about 2 months ago just to kind of gauge where our political sentiments are, where along this axis we place ourselves. Are we enthusiastic? Are we going to vote? Do we hate the government? What is it that you're feeling? Many polls are out, and you know, it's interesting. I've been watching polls very, very closely, and they seem to suggest that people across the nation are feeling exactly the same way. They're fed up. They're fed up with government because government has been so blatantly almost inhumane. There's no rhyme or reason for the ridiculous things that are happening in Congress. And there's a feeling that this is it's a joke, you know. It's a cruel joke being played upon people who are very sincere and who see the vote as really a measure of their participation in government and so forth. And it's like the Wizard of Oz. Hello, Allie from New York. You're on the air.
Hi, Yatrice. How are you doing?
Thank you.
Okay, you're asking for my political philosopher. I just wanted to say that when I became at the age of voting, you always saw that when you went to the booth, you were voting for these people that had ethics, you know? And mm-hmm. because to me, ethics is a bigger thing that anybody could show out there. Because if you have ethics, you also have feelings towards all the people, and you know that you're not going to do wrong, okay? And then you're going to serve your people, whatever people. I'm not talking about a specific race, ethnicity. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about everyone. But if you take a look from the city council, especially here in New York, when they get Bloomberg, not the second term, the third term, because that's the one that he asked for and which he didn't win, he pay more than half of those people in the city council. So I'm not even talking about Obama because that's a lost case. That Republican and Democratic thing, it's just like you just said, a joke. But when you look at your city council, and these people pocket the money, and they gave this man his third term. That did it. I mean, it did it for me before because he did it for me with Obama. I voted for Obama the first time, but the second time, I made sure that I went there. Not that I wanted to go to the booth and vote, but I just needed to go there and give it to anybody besides the Republican and Democrats. And I'm just thinking about that this is the people that and people always say, oh, you have to participate in your local election because those are the ones that you really, really will be able to vote, and they will be able to do something, to push them to do something, like Roosevelt say, push me. But you know what? The corruption is so big here in New York City that I will never go there and vote again for anybody because they're using you. And the Democrats, one of the callers said, have been a disgrace to people of color, especially to African American in this country, and now the Latinos. They have these people going in droves to vote for them. And what they have done, Bill Clinton have been the worst president for people of color, starting with us, the Latinos, okay? He had been the worst president. What did he do? He signed something I believe it was 94 or 96. He signed that thing that if anybody had committed a minor crime, they would send you back into your country if you weren't a citizen. And if you go on and on and on what this man did, and people, they love him. And that is what I don't understand. How can we push these people to change their mind about these two parties? And even though they say, oh, you could just go out and vote for the less of the two evil. And like you said, both of them are evil. None of them going to do anything for you. So why are you going there? And I feel so bad because on election day, you go to run here where I live on the west side, and you see all these people with posters. And the last time I got into a big fight telling a woman about the man that she was voting for, this guy is Stringer, who wanted to develop the front, all the open space in this, what you call it, the projects. And she told me that I was a liar because I said I had the paper at home that I could show you, that he came from his office, that he wanted to put this high-rise building and have people coming on a different door for the low-income people. Two doors, and that's what they have been doing here on the west side.
So
they build
all
these high-rises, they do the 80-20, and they have people going through the back of the building if you own the 20%.
So what, therefore, is your political consciousness? What does it lead you to do? How do you live as a politically conscious person?
Well, I know that I moved the button on one of the callers saying that going out there and protesting was a form of begging. So I will continue my begging. I will continue to do, I will continue going out there. I was out there on May Day. May Day was beautiful day because on May Day, I had never seen on a May Day so many young people. That was the biggest surprise to me. These young people, those are the people that we have to get now and start indoctrinating them with whatever is going on. Because you know what? They're seeing what is out there. And the only thing that I could do is my little going out and support the groups that I work with and go out there and protest. And that's what we did. When the day that the Blasio, the union didn't want us to be there, they didn't want to join us. Because these people, they get afraid that the Blasio won't do something for them. So they didn't want to participate with us. But you know what? We were out there to let him know. And, you know, even though we were very far, they knew that we were out there. So that's the only thing that I could do. Go out there and, you know, show up on the protest and let these politicians that we know what are they doing and we are not stupid.
Thank you so much for your
Thank
call
you.
Today, Ali. Thank you. From New Jersey, Gary, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you, Latrice.
Hi.
I hope you're doing well. I love your music,
Hi.
By the way.
Oh, thanks. Thanks a lot.
like the previous call, I was at the Union Square May Day rally, and then we went down to, I guess it was City Hall, somewhere in there. It's all, you know, a lot of cops, of course, and the cages that you have to stay in and et cetera. But my political leaning is constantly third party. I made up my mind probably 50 years ago, that the two-party system is completely corrupt to no end. It's a real, real joke on the American people. And I very rarely donate to anything because of the fact that it's usually squandered and it's put in people's pockets. So, but I did send $50 to Ralph Nader, and I did send $50 to Jill Stein. That's my candidates. But as far as the people go in this country, I don't think they're going to ever wake up. They argue just like the politicians want them to. They argue about toothpicks in the forest. It's ridiculous. I was watching C-SPAN. They're debating, or they had a committee for the Comcast and Time Warner hearings, mm-hmm. and it's just theater. It's ridiculous. I can't even. I don't understand how people can be so stupid. The one from Michigan, I can't remember his name, but his father was a House of Representatives. He was, and now his wife wants to be. It's like 80 years of this same politician
and his family. It's a dynastic approach to politics.
What's that?
the dynastic approach to politics.
That's it. That's it. So now we're going to look and look at all that the Clintons do for us in this country. They're going to put Hillary on a pedestal, and we're going to start all this rhetoric again about, you know, I don't understand again, too. We have elections 24/7. It's just constant bombardment with this media coverage of junk. It's just what it is. It's just complete junk. And I had a previous call a couple Fridays ago. I misspoke. I said 50,000 jobs. I meant 50,000 good-paying factory jobs disappeared. And we import people. So, and I have nothing against anybody. I believe everybody should have a shot at earning a living. But when we went to NAFTA, we destroyed Mexican and South American economies by dumping all kind of stuff. And we accuse other countries of unfair trade. It's ridiculous. I can't understand how anybody would believe a politician. The only advice I could say is just vote third party. I mean, go to the polls, vote third party, and, eventually it might make a dent into how they think down there, K Street and the politicians.
K Street is where all the lobbyists are in Washington, D.C.
Oh, yeah, that's the retreaded staff and Congress and senators. They just wander down to K Street, and they're paid off, for doing the right thing for them.
Well,
so
thank
I
you,
guess
Gary.
That's where I stand. I'm a third-party voter, and I even voted one time for Lyndon LaRouche, believe it or not. You know, I don't follow anything he says, but I'm so disgusted with, the two-winged body.
Yeah, two wings of a flightless bird.
Yes, that's it. I think that we're talking about obesity. I think that bird is better go on a diet.
Thank you, Gary, for your call today.
Okay, take care.
So well, Chicago is next. Henry, you're on the air.
How you doing, you Trace?
Fine, thank you, Henry. How are you?
All right. It's a very interesting question, and I'm going to try my best to explain it to you in the best possible way. Obviously, growing up, I was, I was a Democrat all the way up until Clinton's second term, where I started seeing some of the stuff where he started becoming more, as I started to open my eyes, he started to become more conservative than anything. So it started kind of blur the lines with me on, okay, why is he claiming to be a liberal and now all of a sudden he's doing all these conservative things? So as the years went on and as I start to grab more information on it, I just started to get a sour taste in my mouth in regards to, our government, and the political structure of it. However, this is the thing that I have discovered over the years is that how they push us to vote, because voting is, supposed to empower the people, there's a lot of elements to political power, and voting is probably the least of them. You could probably put economics way ahead over voting. And what I mean by economics is that I mean by, controlling one's economy, because, I look at the United States as a group of special interest groups. And these special interest groups have particular weapons that they use to basically defend themselves. So generally, when you look at such groups, like ethnic or basically political ideology or race or whatever, they have a special way of controlling politics or controlling their political stance. So the one thing that I'm trying to figure out, because I'm still a work in progress as far as what my political ideas is, that, trying to find out what special interest groups that I belong in and how strong that I can help these special interest groups, obtain political power or to maintain political power. Because, depending on geography, depending on race, depending on ethnic background, depending on, whatever organization you belong in, you have to have some sort of backing of a special interest group. So I guess I'm just saying that you know, I guess I got to figure out what special interest group that I belong in, and how can I raise or how can I strengthen, you know, from my individual works on how I can strengthen that special interest group to gain more political power. And another thing too is that, you know, I'm a teacher, so I'm going to be teaching political science to my children. So it's like, you know, I have to educate them as early as possible on how politics are, because I think one of the things that we fail as you know, in education is teaching kids teaching political science early. Because honestly, I didn't have political science until about almost my first year of college. So I think we need to, you know, that's one of my missions, is to teach kids politics early so they can have a strong political view and we're not so confused as adults right now on what our political views are and what our political stands are.
Well, that's quite profound, Henry. And I'm glad that you are aware that you, as you say, you are a work in progress. That's incredible insight.
Yeah.
And it's a very positive thing.
Yeah. And you know, and this is something you talk about too, and I've been learning to do this over the years. And I heard this on your show a couple of times, is that, you know, you talk about watching media defensively. And that's the way I've been kind of like doing, to kind of grab more information, try to get more information as possible, because, you know, obviously we can't be everywhere. So the thing is that we have to make sure that we obtain the information and basically filter out what we need, what we know is important and what's not important. And that also shapes my political view as well.
Well, thank you, Henry from Chicago. You stood up for yourself today and gave us a lot to think about. Thanks so much for your call. New York, Jason, you're on the air.
No, hi, how you doing?
Fine, thank you, Jason. How are you?
I haven't called in a while, but I was just want to weigh in with your question about political philosophy. And I think first I'd like to make a disclaimer that I'm not affiliated with any party particular or any movement particular. I'm an observer of history and the lay of the land, as you will, of our corporate status in this so-called government. Those of you, first of all, how many viewers listen to your radio program?
Well, it depends. I get a reading from the engineer.
And that would be in the thousands, 100,000s, six digits.
Oh, it would be in thousands, yes, of course.
Yeah. Okay. Well, all they need to do, your listeners, is to read United States Code's Title 28, 3002, Chapter 176, where United States Corporation is listed as a corporation. United States Government, a.k.a. USA, is listed as a corporation. It's not me telling you this. It's in the books. Also, February 21st, 1871, is when this so-called government established the District of Columbia. That's 1871. And it was reorganized in June 11th, 1878, and through various bankruptcies in 1933. So when you ask about the political consciousness, you have to ask, well, what are we dealing with first? And who are you as a political conscious being? Are we a politically conscious being inside of a legitimate government, or are we a political conscious being inside a prison, corporate prison, as collateral to be used as workers and as indentured servants, or as citizens to make money off the government who takes our taxes on a daily basis? I want to remind everybody that Title 28, United States Code 3010, Chapter 176, which made the United States a corporation. Also in that same Title 28, United States Code 3002, Section 15A, is when the Bar Association was established, the American Bar Association. So as we ask a question about political consciousness, ask what venue or what arena are we existing in? Are we truly living in a democracy where the American dreams and a picket fence in the house and a car is what we're achieving? Or are
we're
we
not living in a democracy. We're living in a republic.
Well, that's not correct. We're in a neither a democracy and neither a republic. We're in a corporate status situation where we are corporate.
I'm talking about the
identity.
the articulated form of politics that the government professes or that the country professes is that of a republic. A democracy is the method by which the political will is expressed.
Neither of those are being exercised. Neither of those have been achieved. Neither of those are really what we are being implemented in the process for due rights and freedom. It may be advertised that way, or maybe touted that way, but it truly is not. And you asked for a political consciousness. I would ask your viewers and yourself to ask who are you? What's your status? And what's your position in life? And what is your heritage in this life? So
I am
indigenous, native to the land, which is called North America, and those who have their lineage or their bloodline before the founding of this country can recognize that, and I'm one of them. I'm from a Moorish, so-called African American lineage background with Native American roots as well as Irish heritage. So that's my background, as well as from the West Indies. However, we have to look at ourselves as being part of a bigger picture here. You may be coming from kidnapped or stolen from another part of the earth, from Africa, brought here, or you may have been immigrants brought here, thinking that you can have a better piece of the pie, and you, upon generation, you were bought and sold into this American dream. However, if you can trace your lineage back before the founding of this country, you can establish your allodial rights. That means land rights.
I understand all of that. I'm trying to get a sense from you whether you're addressing the question at hand. And the question I
clearly addressed the question is that you're not interpreting the way that you're satisfied with.
Okay. I generally, I just don't like to argue. I find it a bit...
No, I'm not arguing with you at all.
No, but I'm saying we're having a discussion. It's not a combative thing. It's a discussion. And in this discussion, the question that we were hoping to get a kind of aggregate sense of is where people fit themselves or fix themselves on the axis of politics. And how do people on a regular day, what is the consciousness that informs them? And I think you've made that quite clear.
I've made that quite clear. I mean, there are remedies to get out of this current situation, and that is not to engage in the current two-party system, which traps your vote and traps your position or your agenda or your goals towards changing this country, is to leave the two-party system altogether. There's been generation upon generation, if not decades of generations, of individuals greater than ourselves who have tried to get involved and participate in the Republican Party, the Independent Party, and, of course, the Democratic Party, to no avail. Just to know
right. We'll have to leave it there, I'm afraid, because we're out of time. But thank you so much, Jason and Henry, Gary, Ali, Michael, Chris, and Sarah. Thank you all for contributing to the discussion today. And, you know, as the weeks go by and the intensity increases where people are expecting to change our minds about one thing or the other via commercials and via advertising campaigns and even programs that are supposed to be public interest type programs, they tell you what to think, what to do, and it's a huge push is going to be made to basically capture the mind. But always maintain a certain independence and a sense of, you know, skepticism. Look at it and as critically as Chris did today, as critically as Ali did today, and look about the political reality that surrounds you and how you can help or make sense of it, at least become conscious about it, and grow, as Henry from Chicago told us today. He's a work in progress. And that is a fantastic thing to say, because it means that you're seeking knowledge and you're open. You're not closed. You are open to all things for examination, and that is an extraordinary way to be. It is when learning occurs, when you're open to learning, when you're open to examining things and making up your own mind. So thank you so much for being with me today. I really do appreciate it. And it is, I always say, it's a privilege and an honor to be in your company. I really do cherish that. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Occupied Territory, America with Mike Fader. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com or on Facebook, Lead Stories with Eutrice Lee. Tomorrow, Free Your Mind Friday. Bye-bye.